Let's go.
Are you ready to level up your journey? Welcome to Get On Top, where we dive deep into the riveting tales of self-made entrepreneurs and corporate titans who have scaled the summit of success. We'll uncover the secrets behind their huge rise. Get ready for a roller coaster of insights, inspiration, and a roadmap to elevate both your mindset and your life. This is Get On Top with Morgan Brown. Today's guest is Maureen Ago, a 26-year-old entrepreneur who is proving that some of the biggest opportunities are often hiding in places most people overlook. While many entrepreneurs dream of launching that next big startup, Maureen took a different path. She has built a business and her success by identifying established businesses with untapped potential, breathing new life into them, and creating value where others saw limitations. Her entrepreneurial journey began with an acquisition of a laundromat, an unconventional move that challenged traditional thinking and became a foundation of her thriving business. Her innovative approach to entrepreneurship has earned her recognition on the BC Business Magazine, where she was featured as her fresh perspective of business ownership and growth. Today, we dive into Maureen's elevated opportunities, the lessons she's learned from investing in what we call a boring business, and why some of the most successful ventures are often hiding in plain sight. Please join me in welcoming the incredibly impressive Maureen Ago to Get On Top. Maureen, welcome.
Hi,
to Get On Top.
Yay.
I'm so happy you're here. Oh,
thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we had a chance to kind of connect in Vancouver and we had a quick coffee, which I could have talked to you for like another 5 hours.
Yeah. And that's clearly happening right now.
We're doing it now. I am so excited because you have obviously reached some incredible heights in our city and we have been recognized for major entrepreneurship. And for, I know you keep on looking, you're looking at me like, really? Kinda? But you have really, I think, gotten the attention of a lot of entrepreneurs. And I think what you could do is first, as like good fashion to us, is let us know where the base was. Where are you from? Tell the audience kind of who you are.
Yeah. So I am born and raised in Vancouver. I grew up in East Vancouver. And growing up, I was a very like academic driven student. So I was very, very driven to kind of get good grades. And it was not any sort of like pressure from my parents. Mm. They never like emphasized like, you know, you need to do the XYZ. I just always had this like intrinsic motivation, I guess, to prove, not my parents, but to prove myself, right? Like I can do, you know, just as good as the person next to me. So like in elementary school, like I would start like a little side business. And then, you know, like I was just trying to find so many different ways to make money. Because growing up, like my mom, and she still is very, very frugal. Like she is the most frugal person I know. And I get all of that from her, unfortunately.
How frugal is that?
Like
what's the depth of the frugalness?
Well, it's kind of like twisted frugality where it's like, oh, tomatoes are on sale. So I'm going to buy like 7 pounds of tomatoes and just not like freeze it or anything. I'll leave it there because I'm going to eat it over time and then it goes bad. And then you're like, oh, well, this is actually not like
a good idea.
It wasn't even a discount if I'm going to be disposing half of it. But I think she's learned a little bit from there. But it was always just like, how much is it? Like, how much is that? That was the first question. Like anytime I bought anything or, you know, like every time we went out to a restaurant, which was like never, it was always, oh, this place isn't very good. I can make it better. Comes home, makes like the same thing, but like times 30. And she would just compare like we ate out. We like bought that meal for $20. I can't believe that was $20. I just made this entire like feast for $20 and it feeds like a family of six for 2 days. So
you were really around that.
Very.
So, and it obviously made a huge impact on you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So like always thinking about money. Right. And like my dad, he, although was educated, right? Mm-hmm. So he went to school in Germany and then he came over here. Like it was Vietnam War, went to school in Germany and then moved to Canada with the rest of his family. Okay. So most of my family, they're here. And he, well, we have three kids, right? My dad has three kids. I have two brothers. And growing up in like a family of five, mm-hmm. basically single income, because my mom, she worked, but it was kind of like minimum wage jobs. Mm-hmm. It was always kind of paycheck to paycheck from what I understand, because it was not shared amongst us kids because we were all very little. And so, you know, just seeing that and seeing how, I guess like the household was kind of controlled by men mm-hmm. because of that income. Mm-hmm. I saw like the disparity with that. And I just grew up knowing like, okay, I need to make money. I don't need to depend on like my partner or my husband. And if anything happens, like I should still be comfortable living my exact life right now because of what I've built for myself and not being dependent on anyone else. So
wow.
Again, like trying to make money.
How old were you when you kind of recognized that?
Probably like 12 or 13.
Yeah, so young.
Really young.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And like obviously around that age, like you can't legally get a job.
No.
So I was like, hey, how can I make money at this age? So I started I started selling like all my clothes.
Oh my gosh.
I just like just go through my closet like every week. It's like, what can I sell? What can I sell? What can I sell? So before Marketplace was a thing, you would open up a separate Instagram account.
Okay.
For your clothing. So I would just post like a picture of like my t-shirt or whatever. It was like $5. And then I'd take the SkyTrain to Metro Town. And then I'd meet up with people. And then I'd sell like my shirt for $5. And then I'd make like $20, right?
Oh my gosh.
And then I just SkyTrain home. And then eventually I was like, okay.
You felt that bug.
I have like no more clothes to sell. What do I do? So then I started doing henna.
Okay.
So I would go to like the little Indian shops close to my house and then I'd buy tubes of henna. And I was very like artistic growing up.
Yes, cool.
So I'd sell like a small design was $5. A bigger design was like $10. And then again, I'd SkyTrain to Metro Town. I'd sit in front of Yogan Fruz. I don't know if it's still there. And then I just do henna on people. So then I started making money there. And then when I could finally get a job,
okay,
whatever, 16, I think, 15, 16, then I started working. And then like from there, it was just
took
work,
off.
Work, work as much as I can. Work during school, work during university. Like that was a really, really good decision that I made.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of people, when they finish school, they have no money. When I finished school, I had $50,000, like high school.
Wow.
I think maybe not 50. Maybe 30, but like
okay,
around.
Enough.
Yeah.
Yes.
So like, I just remember I went traveling for 4 months and I spent 12K.
Wow.
Comfortably.
Wow.
Yeah. When I was 18.
So you already had that bug in you to be that entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And so you're saying that you worked all the way up to that point. And then when did you start to resonate that you wanted to become a business owner?
So I went to school at UBC for dietetics mm-hmm. and I for sure thought that was what I was going to do. I really, really wanted to be a sports dietitian because of my athletic background.
Okay.
So I used to compete in Olympic weightlifting. And so I wanted to like work in that kind of area. And then in my fourth year, I would have graduated my sixth year because it was a pretty long program. I was just like, you know, this career, I've kind of lost passion for it. And there's no money to be made in it, really, like in the kind of healthcare industry. Like you can be a consultant and like do private practice. Mm-hmm. But that's just not what I want to do with my life. And like nutrition is a hobby. Fitness is a hobby. I don't want to treat it as a job. And
you moved away from it.
Yeah.
A bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So then from there, I was already running my swim school. It was already doing really, really well.
Okay.
And then I wanted to
You started a swim school.
Yeah.
How old were you when you started a swim school?
So it wasn't like a swim school back then.
Classes?
It was just like me doing lessons for random people.
Amazing.
In their condos. And this was during COVID because mm-hmm. all the pools had shut down and I was a lifeguard. So I didn't get called back to work. So then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Again.
That makes sense.
Well, also, I wasn't that senior. So like when people started getting called back to work, I was like one of the later ones to get called back.
Okay, you were
back.
The younger.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, I want to make money. I have time. I'm doing all these courses online. So I just started like teaching lessons to the kids in these condo hotels or condo pools in downtown. And then that just grew and grew and grew word of mouth. Literally no ad spend for like 3 years. And then when I hit that fourth year of university, mm-hmm. that business was already doing really well. And I really wanted to get into a second business that didn't involve me actively being in it for it to run. Because I found that with my swim school, if I was sick, then you just basically no money, right?
Like, right, nothing there.
Yeah, there's nothing. You're getting paid for your time. You're exchanging your time for money. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to get away from because I also couldn't take vacation. I didn't take vacation for 7 years because I just didn't want to have no income, basically. Right? Yes. So then that's when I, you know, started looking at boring businesses is what this category is called. So laundromats, car washes, self-storage facilities, vending machines, all that good stuff.
I like how it's called boring businesses.
Yeah, it's become very, very trendy.
It's very trendy.
Yeah, it is.
BBs.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. And so I got, I want to say that I got really lucky with the laundromat that I landed on, but I also, you know, I did the work to get it.
Yes.
But it was just good time, good place. And now it's been, we're coming up to 3 years.
Wow,
at the laundromat.
It's been 3 years already.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So tell me, okay, so I guess, you know, I think, you know, you're 26 years old. You have a wealth of knowledge, I think, on the people business because you really started when you were so young and then you had this entrepreneurial bug. Where was it where you were like, okay, where did you get the idea of going into that boring business? Mm-hmm. Where did that idea come from?
Yeah, so I love listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. I listen to probably like one to two a day. And I was obsessed with Cody Sanchez.
Yes.
So
huge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everyone loves her.
Yes.
And actually, no, I discovered her on YouTube. So I was watching, I was watching like YouTube and I was also listening to podcasts. And then she would always like talk about laundromats. And I was like, okay, look, let's give it a try. Yeah. And then I found this laundromat podcast.
Okay.
And I started listening to that just completely. And then I would listen to like 3 episodes a day, just like really, really understanding the laundry industry. Mm-hmm. I have not listened to it since like I bought it.
That's so funny.
But, yeah, like,
and that's
from
where
there,
it came from.
I was like, yeah, pretty much there. I was like, let's give it a shot. She seems to be preaching it. Let's see if the internet is true.
Okay, I love that. So it's one thing to take, you know, to listen to something and another thing to actually execute it, right? What steps? Like, I think there's a lot of listeners that are thinking, oh my God, I want to own a laundromat. Everyone that's listening to it, it's like owning another business, you know. It's one thing to hear it and another thing to actually put things into play. What was the first thing you did? Did you just start scrolling Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace for businesses to buy? Or was it, you know, scouting a location that you liked and then kind of honing in on what the locations you thought would be successful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is like the classic story that, you know, I tell all the time, but I still have it. It's broken. An electric Vespa.
Okay.
And I rode around Vancouver and I had like a little Excel of all the laundromats in Vancouver. And I had a letter that was very generic. I printed it out, put it in an envelope.
Okay.
And then on my Vespa, I would just like give it to whoever was working there. And if they were closed, I'd stick it in their door. And either the owner was there, the manager, or just a staff. Mm-hmm. And then this one that I currently have, he wasn't open, so I just put it in the door. And then they called me back, like, I want to say, like, a week or two later.
Really?
And when I got that call, I was on a walk with my dog. I was, like, not expecting it at all. And he's like, yeah, so I'm the owner of da-da-da-da-da. You want to buy my laundromat? I was like, yes. I can't believe this is happening. And that's when I recently dropped out of university, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what was the thing that pushed you to drop out of university and to take a chance on yourself?
Yeah. So I was like fully in science and nutrition. Mm-hmm. So my entire like undergrad was that. And then when I decided to drop out, I was like, you know, I'm so close. I'm in my fourth year. I could do one more semester of school and then I have a degree. And so let me try to pivot to like a business degree because that's what I want to do. I want to do business. Right. So then I enrolled in like Econ 101 or something like that.
Right.
And there was like one guy that was 40 and I sat next to him because I was like, I can't. Like, I've always been like friends with like the older people because I just never really like understood or got along
the
with
peer
people.
Level. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I sat next to him, made friends with him. And then I think after like 3 weeks, I was like, what am I doing here? Like, I already know like the laundromat that is the industry that I want to get into.
Okay.
My swim school is doing really good. I can scale that and hire some instructors. Like, I feel like I'm just really wasting my time for a piece of paper right now. Mm-hmm. Whereas like what I want to do won't even require me to have a degree. So even though there's only 3 months left of me getting this degree, like I was just so mentally drained. And I just felt like my time, like instead of sitting in a lecture hall, was worth more. Mm-hmm. And I could just be using that time to be researching laundromats and getting into like actually the nitty gritty, like let's get this going.
Oh my God. And most people would have like a mentor or peer to kind of drive them up that hill to ensure that they're making the right decisions. Because what comes with buying a business, and whether it's a merger or an acquisition or whatever it may be, like there's a lot of different things like the value of that business, right? The assets that it holds. Who was telling you this? Or was it purely just podcasts, just teaching you? Because I think a lot of people are like, how can I value? Obviously, now we have ChatGPT and all these other ideas, but who was helping you, Maureen, during that time?
It was so funny because usually when you acquire a business, there's like a lawyer or yes. even a realtor,
yeah.
right? None of that. We did it completely private. And this is what I actually learned from like Cody and the Laundromat mm-hmm. podcast is like, if you can cut out like all the those middlemen, mm-hmm. you will save on so much. So we tried to completely do it just between us and we just like negotiated a price. I did have like one guy who I still keep in touch with, and he is, how do I call it? He's like our maintenance guy, but he has like a big team okay. of employees that kind of service other laundromats mm-hmm. and hotels. And he like installs brand new laundromats in other areas of BC as well. So he was kind of like my mentor, but I basically just said like, hey, is this a good deal? Like the machines are like, you know, from 1990s, whatever. And like, this is the location. Like he knew exactly what it was. He's like, yeah, that's a good deal. And I was like, okay, cool. I just needed someone to like confirm. And like, he's been in the industry for
amazing
20 years or whatever. And then once I got the okay, I was like, okay, let's do it.
Oh my God. So tell those that do not know, what's the profit on something like a laundromat? Like, what are we looking at for like a monthly or, yeah. or a yearly?
Yeah. So yeah. usually the rule of thumb is like 20 to 30% profit mm-hmm. is really solid.
Good.
Yeah. So we also get about like, I'd say on the higher end, 30, because we okay. do a lot of commercial stuff.
Ah. So it came yeah. with commercial contracts.
No.
You had
no.
to get the commercial contracts.
So usually when you buy a laundromat, you're mm-hmm. looking for like a turnkey business. You're right. not looking for something where you need to start it from the bottom up. But in my case, it was kind of like a hybrid of both.
Okay.
So it was turnkey in the sense that the machines were already there and it was a pre-existing laundromat. The piping was there, the, you know, HVAC, all the water and stuff. But it wasn't turnkey in a sense where... So that laundromat has a very interesting story.
Okay.
The owner, he eventually only, like, he got the laundromat passed down from his dad.
Okay.
Which they used to open it, like, normal hours, right? 7 days a week. And then eventually they would lessen their hours. I don't know over the course of how many years, but when it was passed down to his son, which was the owner that I bought it from, he had dwindled down the hours so much so that it was only open Friday, Saturday, Sunday from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m.
Oh my gosh.
But typically when you go to a laundromat, the last load is about an hour or an hour and a half before closing time.
Okay.
Because you can't come
like
to a laundromat.
Like 10:30, 10 o'clock.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right? So he would sometimes just close at 11. So he would only open for like 2 hours. So the regulars would know that. So they would just come like right in at nine, get one load done, and then they're done. So we had to build it up from there because he drove away so many customers because of that. Because also, like, let's say like on a Saturday, he had something, he just wouldn't open. And like no signs, no nothing. Like he would just not open, which is clearly not how you run a business. But when it's been passed down to you and like...
Different.
Yeah,
different.
It's different. Like, you don't have no, like, you don't have a lease to pay, like, because his dad owned the unit as well.
Okay, good, good.
So you're only paying for like... I don't know, strata fees.
Yeah.
So you don't have a drive.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't have a drive to like make rent because you are the landlord, right?
We get that a lot, you know, in business where someone has like a secondary or a family member takes over their business and they end up not really appreciating and having the love for it mm-hmm. as a first founder, right? Mm-hmm. It's a classic like every business. The second owner maybe doesn't have the same intentions.
Yeah.
But the third owner always wants to innovate. That's always the case, okay, right? You're innovating off of that next space.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you kind of found a diamond in the rough because it was all there for you.
Yeah.
And you were able to kind of add to it.
Yeah.
Did you think about cutting costs, like employee costs or any of that? So you went right for it and started taking out all the messy fat.
Yeah, I had no employees. Well, I had one.
Okay.
And initially I offered her like full-time 9 to 5. And then I realized like, wow, that is so expensive. And then I would work about 5 days a week from 9 to 3. And then I teach my lessons from about like 4 to 8.
Okay.
And then I get my parents to do the evening shift. And then sometimes on the weekends. And then that one staff that I initially offered like full time, basically, she only worked like once a week. So, yeah.
At Oakland Realty, real estate is personal. It's your first home, your next chapter, your biggest decision, and your biggest opportunity. That's why we lead with people first. Trusted advisors, deep local knowledge, and a commitment to doing things right every time. Whether you're buying, selling, or simply planning your future, our agents are here to guide you with clarity, confidence, and care. Because a home isn't just a place you live, it's where life happens. Oakland Realty, inspiring positive change, one person, one home, and one community at a time.
We started there. Lots of volunteer work from my parents.
Yeah, I was going to say your parents. I want your parents to volunteer. But it does take a whole village
for sure,
right?
For sure. Yeah. And my dad still, he helps out to this day. He's the maintenance guy now.
Ah.
So he's very handy.
Okay.
And he's now retired. And I feel like he gets a lot of joy out of like knowing that he's helping me and supporting my business because he walks around as though he's the owner as well.
Of course.
And it's like at first when he did that, I was like, Dad, you're not the owner. Like, stop making these decisions because you're confusing my team. Like you're saying one thing and I'm saying another thing.
Yeah.
But they obviously know that I'm the owner. Right. But like because that's my dad, they need to respect him as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then now I'm just like, okay, like I'm very, very appreciative of like what you do because
family run.
Well, it shows that you care.
Yeah.
Right. Like he's there even more than me sometimes because he just like wants to check in, like, how's my machine doing? Like oh I fixed God. This yesterday. It's like a little fun project for him. And I love that. I know.
I love that your dad and mom are along the ride with you. And okay, so a couple things. Let's go back to this whole idea of you starting this business, you've purchased the business knowing that you're going to have to make something even more strong out of it, right? Hours have to extend. How did you build the customer base?
How did I build the customer base? Well, so there's two sectors of laundry. So there's your residential, then there's your commercial. And with residential, like that just comes with time.
Mm.
When a place is only open 3 days a week from 9 to 11. You have to make your signs bold. You have like we didn't have balloons, but I wish we had some balloons. Like you just gotta make it so that
known.
It's like, hey, listen, we're open 7 days a week now, like normal people hours. we even extended like to close late compared to our competitors down the street just to like have that extra, you know, competitive advantage. So we did have like this big banner as well that said like open 7 days a week. But, you know, since then, like, it's definitely like just a whole 180. Like, we're so busy now. Like, when I was working over this weekend because I was covering a staff that was sick, I was feeling super overwhelmed. I was like, there's too many. Our space is so small, too. I was like, we need a bigger space.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
People are lining up.
Yeah. 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 Well, yeah. Kind of. For machines, yes. You do actually have to line up for them.
You have to line up. I know.
If a machine is being used and it's like the one that you want because it's like one of the bigger ones because we only have a few bigger ones, you do have to line up. There is a queue.
Now, obviously, there's margins. You know, like I remember, this is so funny. I remember my mom, our washer and dryer broke down 1 year or a couple years. I think my parents were just busy entrepreneurs like we are, right? And our washer dryer broke down. And so she would just go and drop off all of our laundry to the laundromat. And then it was folded. Everything was perfectly put into these black garbage bags. I'll never forget
Which you
this.
Should not be doing, by the way.
Just not should
be
doing
it. Put it in the white ones or the clear ones, but not the black ones.
Thank you. Like, why am I getting picking up these? Like, we look like we're laundering money or something right on our side. But I remember it was like not much of a difference in cost for the folding. This is how funny. I remember this when I was like 13. But then it was worth, we would just continue to go back. Like my parents loved the freedom of the convenience of that. It was very funny because everything was folded for us. We didn't have to spend hours of doing laundry. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's where you find those margins, those little bits where you can upcharge your customer a bit? Or where is it just come from getting really good customers in the door?
I'd say it's a little bit of both, right? Okay. So kind of going back to, I guess there's the residential side, there's a commercial side, but within residential, you split that up and there's the drop-off side. So people who are willing to pay more of a premium price for that drop-off service, mm-hmm. Like your parents. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the self-serve side, which is, you know, you're just going in using your machines. With the self-serve, you are looking for that consistent, you know, customer who's, mm-hmm. you know, there's two more laundromats down the street from us. Like, why are they coming to us? We are a little bit more expensive too. And we are a little bit smaller as well. But it's like that extra service you provide for them, right? So like friendly staff greeting you. We have a little bit of a different system compared to other laundromats. So we do accept card. Yeah, yeah. So we accept card and you can put your laundry in a little faster because we don't do the coin system like other laundromats do.
Oh, wow. That's a nice habit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We basically, like, long story short, there was a lot of coin jams happening. And then to increase the price of your machines, because our machines are quarter operated, there are some that are like loonies and toonies, but ours is specifically quarters. So for our biggest machine, you would have to put 38 quarters in.
Wow.
So you can just imagine, like it's so annoying. Like your fingers actually hurt after that. And because we're doing so much commercial laundry, like I can't have my staff waste their own time putting quarters in a machine. Like they need to be doing laundry, right? So we switched it, put one quarter in, and then you pay at the front.
Amazing.
Yeah. So amazing. Very much so, like, our customers, like, we trust our customers too, because they could easily say, like, oh, I use two machines when they actually use like four.
Right.
Right. But it's like, you're regulars. Come on.
Like,
right?
We see so what you're doing.
Yeah. Yes. There's a lot of like customers that come in all the time. Right. And we know them. Like, they treat this place like really, really well. And I'm super happy with the community that we've developed at our small little shop. But then when it comes to the commercial side of things, like, I did have to grow that from the ground up. And that's like a really, really big revenue source for us.
Must be.
And that's,
what does that look like on the commercial level? Is it like hotels, or what are the things that people are running that are looking for commercial laundry?
Yeah. So a lot of physio clinics, a lot of RMT clinics.
Nice.
Spas, like anything to do with massage, basically. Lots of linens there. We worked with like some hair salons before, some restaurants, and some like cold plunge, kind of like sauna wellness places.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
So there's a nice, like, a good mix of it all.
Yeah.
I want to go back to you being that Olympic weightlifter.
Okay, so
let's go there.
Lots of confusion with that title.
Yes.
Olympic weightlifting is the name of the sport.
Is the name of the sport.
You can be an Olympic weightlifter.
I'm going to be. Now, if I can get Olympic in front of my name,
yeah,
let's do this.
Do it.
We need to do this.
Just pick up a bar and then you're an Olympic weightlifter.
But where did you, like, so obviously that's one, so people must like love that.
Yeah, they're like, you've been in the Olympics.
Sorry.
Yeah, but if you say weightlifting, they're like, oh, how much do you like bench?
Yeah, how much you bench?
I'm like, no, that's not it.
So what is it?
Bro.
Tell me. You're like, tell me, what is it? And why I'm asking you is, obviously athletic, there's such a fine tune that every athlete, business owner that I know has brought in a lot of resilience to their business. Do you think there's a commonality there? Because it's really mind, right? Over what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So what do you think that you brought a little bit of that athletic mindset to business in general?
Yeah. You know what? I never thought about that, but come to think of it, yes. Mm-hmm. Specifically in the sport of Olympic weightlifting, it's an individual sport, right? So it's you and the bar. Also, a lot of people think Olympic weightlifting is very dangerous compared to, you know, soccer or any kind of team sport. But with any individual sport, you are in full control of the bar and whatever you're doing, like gymnasts, right? So like if you hurt yourself, it's because your mind wasn't there, you weren't focused, and you didn't do the technique that you were supposed to do.
Fascinating.
Right? So like if you injure yourself, it really comes down to you.
Whereas
like with soccer, like someone can kick you in the shin and that was not your fault, right?
No.
So yeah, with that being said, it is very much so like focus on your technique, lots of repetition, just it's the snatch and the clean and jerk. So
oh,
you're
yeah.
only competing in two movements.
Okay.
So you're just doing that again and again. Obviously, there's different variations of it, right? Like the power clean and go into
it. Are you still doing that side at all?
No. So basically, like when I got engaged and then when I opened the laundromat, I just wanted to focus on my work.
Okay.
And so I was doing it non-competitively for a little bit, but then kind of, you know, when you're not working towards like a competition, mm-hmm. There's not really any drive anymore. So then now I just do like mostly like strength training, bodybuilding focused workouts.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But yes, mental game. For sure. Like when you're competing like on the stage, because it's totally different, like working out, like hitting a PR in the gym with your friends versus like you're on stage doing the lift.
Like doing the lift in front of everybody.
In front of like hundreds of people. It's very different than just like going to the gym and doing the same lift. Like now you have like so many people watching you and it's all just like, you got to like clock them out. Like just don't imagine everyone's in their underwear or something. I don't know.
I love that saying. It's like,
I know, me too.
I feel like you just have to take a deep breath and know that you do your best. Yeah. I think a lot of times, like whenever I'm doing talk, like speaking arrangements or engagements for, you know, TED and all that stuff, I was like, I'm just casually,
doing TEDx.
Just doing a TEDx, man. Whatever. We're going to do it. I need to know a couple things about your business. What are three things that you look for while evaluating it? Because obviously now you've run this incredible laundromat. You've run these great schools that has continually growing. Now, when you're looking at businesses that you want to buy, Maureen, what are you looking for? And what are three things that you're looking for to while you're evaluating that business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for me, it's always been the same.
Okay.
I want something reoccurring. So I love anything with kind of like a subscription model or just like something where I know I have that customer coming back every week, every month, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So that's number one.
Okay.
Number two would be non-seasonal. So I don't want to have an ice cream shop. Right. Yeah. I don't want to have like a ton of work in the summer.
I'm just joking. Killer. What was it called? Killer. What's that new ice cream shop that I just went to? Killer Ice. That place is packed.
Oh, okay.
But like, you're right. Seasonal.
Yeah.
Keep on going.
Yeah.
Keep on going.
So yeah, like something non-seasonal. I want it to run all year round. I want reoccurring revenue, steady stream of income, because as an entrepreneur, there's no such thing as steady. So like I want as close as I can to a paycheck, basically.
Beautiful.
And then the last one's kind of like recession-proof, COVID-proof, right?
Great.
So I want an essential business where, you know, you're running all year round, even with whatever's happening with the world. My swim school doesn't really qualify for that, but the laundromat does.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Here in Vancouver, we're on a water shortage, like lockdown coming up. Do you know that? Yeah.
No.
So,
because of summer?
No, because of summer.
Yeah. Happens every year.
But guess what? And not essential, and all the essential pieces continue to run their business.
Okay.
So like a laundromat and a car wash mm-hmm. are two of those items,
mm-hmm.
which is, I'm like, is it essential that your car is clean? But like, it makes sense, right? And it's seasonal. It's not seasonal. You're doing it year round. That's excellent. What is the difference between a business that looks profitable and one that looks valuable to you? Like what is, when you're looking at something for long-term, you know, growth, what is something that you're like, okay, what you said is like that 20 to 30%. What about something that looks like more of a value piece, right? Are you growing your financial statements so that they just show major profits, or what are your things that you think of when you're looking at a business like that?
So I've been out of this space, I feel like, for 3 years now. But when I'm looking at a business, I'm looking at like the potential that it has, mm-hmm. I'd say. So with the laundromat that I bought, I was like, okay, these machines are really, really good. They're kept in really good condition. You can tell like the owner, you know, he takes really good care of them.
Yeah.
And it just needs a little bit of sprucing up. And then with my creative touch, then, you know, and the marketing and whatever, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. hiring the right people, making sure they're trained to kind of reflect what you want to have your customers see the shop as, mm-hmm. then there's a lot of potential there. But it's because I have a lot of trust in myself too. Like,
Talk about that.
Yeah, I've built a lot of confidence over the past few years, because mm-hmm. obviously I bought the laundromat when I was 23.
Wow.
Yeah. So I put like most of my money into the laundromat. And so like, you have to have so much trust in yourself when it's your own personal money, right? Like people on the internet, they're like, how did you get the loan? How did you qualify? I didn't qualify. I just paid for it.
It's not interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's, I think, where people immediately go to is, how did you get the funds for it?
There's
right?
no way. There's like no a 23 way you're 23 year old could buy that and have that much in savings. Yeah. If you grew up with a frugal mom. Yeah. There's a lot you can do.
But you could, but you also like bet on yourself at 23. Like a lot of people, when they're, especially young entrepreneurs, you have to have so much assurance in yourself. Like when I started at 21, I was like, I'm going to do this. There was no ifs, buts about it. And a lot of it was because of scarcity growing up. Like I was like, oh my God, I need to survive, right? Did you feel like, was there any doubt in your mind at that time when you bought that laundromat? Or were you like, I'm going to make this work?
No, it was 100% doubt.
See?
Oh, it was so much doubt. I almost went home crying like every single day. So basically,
so let's talk about
that. I would sit at the front desk. And I would just look out the window and I just see people walking by. And in my head, I'm like, come in. Like, I'm not scary. Just come in. Just say hi to me. I'm like so deprived of like human interaction right now because there was no one coming in.
Wow.
And if there were people who came in, it was like, oh, I'm just coming here just to dry for like 30 minutes. So here's $2. And I'd make like $2.
Oh my gosh.
On the hour. Okay. I'd make so little. And luckily, like I still had my laundromat and whatnot. But yeah, like I would call my boyfriend, now fiance, mm-hmm. and I'd be like, this is a flop. Like I shouldn't have done this. The internet's lying to me. And this is just all hokey pokey.
And then where was that moment where it changed for you in that moment?
So we got our first commercial client.
Okay.
And
was that picking up the phone and just cold calling and going? Okay,
we got really lucky with them.
Okay.
They called us.
Wow.
Within like the first, I want to say month or two of mm-hmm. us opening, like they called us and we said, yep, we'll do it. And then essentially like we didn't bargain. Like it is what it is. We went there. We did a good job. And we even like work with them to this day.
Okay.
So they've been really, really great with us. And then from there, finding more commercial. I just knew like, you know, the residents would come, the signs there, we're open, we're on Google. Mm-hmm. Tried to do a little bit of social media.
Yeah.
We don't do that anymore. But we did try that out for a little bit and then just really trying to grow the commercial side of it to actually get laundry in. But for a few months, I was bringing in my own laundry, trying to make it seem that we got a drop-off order.
Oh my God, I love you. You're like, I'm going to make this happen. Yeah. So I'm going to bring my own laundry.
I did my own laundry.
Yes.
I would stand there, I'd fold it, I'd do all that stuff. Customers would walk in, yeah, I just got this drop-off order. Like, you should try it.
Oh my God. Well, I think it's very refreshing to hear that self-doubt was there, but you were able to just like take it and it took time, right? I think that's so another thing.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
You're like,
feels like an eternity when you're in it though.
Yes.
But when you speak about it and it's like a thing of the past, like, oh yeah, it was like, you know, whatever, right? But when you're in it, you're like, oh my God.
This is insane.
Yeah. This feels like an eternity.
Oh my gosh. So now how much staff on both of your companies do you hold? Like, are you holding, you're now went from, you know, ownership, but what comes with that is like the operational management side. How many people are currently employed with you?
So at the laundromat, we have 4 laundry attendants.
Okay.
And then we have 2 delivery drivers.
Okay.
And then my dad does the maintenance.
Go dad.
So yeah. Thank you, dad. And that's 4, 5, 6 technically.
Okay.
Because my dad is still
there.
A volunteer. I do pay him.
And love.
With love, but I do pay him as well. And then at my swim school, it kind of fluctuates, but we have between 8 to 10 instructors at a
Great.
Time. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your swim school and just, you know, I think you...
And I have a VA.
Yeah, and you have a VA, which is... I love the idea of a VA. It's the best. When you're talking about, your entrepreneur mindset is so much that you're intaking. And if you had $100,000 today, if I gave you $100,000 and you were like, what can I make the highest profit in a business?
You're not going to like my answer.
I want to hear it.
I'd put it in the stock market.
Oh my God. You girl. Fine. Okay. If it wasn't the stock market, what business
would
you go
for? Well right
I
now.
Know. I know. It. What business? How about that? Instead of the stock market, if I give you $100,000, where would you be kind of jumping towards? What business out of all the businesses that you've investigated, you've now been in a BB for a long time. Where would you put it, you think?
A second laundromat.
Yeah.
We're actually on track to acquiring a second one.
Yay!
Before the end of this year.
Oh my God, I'm excited for you.
I'll take that donation anytime.
Yeah, here we go. Boom. I'll give you a calculator risk investment. I love it. So now, of course, you know, I think a lot of personal growth has happened for you, Maureen. And I think a lot of people are watching you saying, you know, what's your next move? Which is so exciting to hear that you're about to acquire something else coming up. Was there a moment in your journey that where you genuinely questioned yourself in this path? And, you know, you came from kind of an education side of it. Was there any moments like that you could share with us?
Literally last week.
Yeah.
I doubt myself probably every week. You know how it is with business, right? It's like one week you have like a really, really good business or like a really, really good moment and everything good seems to be happening at the same time. You're like, yeah, I'm killing it. And then like literally the next week, everything that could go wrong is going wrong.
Yeah.
And so I'm in those moments. I'm like, ah, I should get a job. Like I should just get like some sort of virtual, something I can just like clock in, get some stable income. Mm-hmm, and then, and then I always talk to my fiance about this and he's like, are you dumb? Like, no, don't do that. But yeah, I don't have many like entrepreneurial friends, mm-hmm. Which is something that I'm working on.
You can be my friend, Marina, any day. Yay.
But,
I think a lot of people want to hear that though, because
I don't have a lot of friends in general, actually.
Yeah, but that's normal for a working gal yourself.
I think it is.
It is very normal.
That's what I tell myself.
No, it is. It totally is. You're young. You're a young entrepreneur. You have like a bunch of staff that works with you. How do you build that trust with those employees? Because, you know, a lot of the time, you know, when you're a young entrepreneur, the staff is sometimes and most likely older than you. How are you doing that?
Yeah, well, a lot of imposter syndrome to start. So when I was interviewing people for the laundromat, when I first bought it, I would get people that are older than me. And like when you're in your 20s, you can look so different when you're like 22 compared to when you're 26. Like there's a lot of maturing that happens in the face. Like I'm starting to get grays, which is like,
oh my God,
I didn't know it started this early.
It does. Good luck.
Darn. But there's a lot of growth that happens there. But yeah, when you're young, I'm still young, but like even younger, lots of imposter syndrome happening there. And then the more you do it, the more interviews you do, the more, you know, training you do.
There.
And yeah, like you realize that, you know, age is just a number and you can do a lot at any age.
Yes. Yeah.
And when you find that kind of confidence in yourself, then it's really just go ahead, go do it and fake it till you make it until you finally feel that confidence because it will happen, right? You will get there one day, but you do need to just fake it.
Oh my God, I love that. I think that's great. And you know, what habits have you built into your business and to yourself that has made a big change in your business and the trajectory of its success? Like what are some of the habits that you changed in your own personal life?
Yeah. So something that I recently picked up and I don't know where I got this from. Mm-hmm. I want to say I thought of it myself. But whatever you find yourself saying, like if there's a task on your to-do and you find yourself saying like, I'll just do that tomorrow, do it right now.
Right.
Anything, you go down your list. If you want to put it off to another day, that means that is a very like
important.
Scary task, but it's also very important. And you should probably just do it now and get it over with because that task, once you start it, it will probably not feel as scary as you made it to be.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I think you're like the execution for most people is very scary.
Yes.
But if you, and a lot of people just procrastinate because they know it's important, but they don't really want to move past it. And they don't want to put their energy into it. Like, do you know what I mean? I think people like look at a list and they're like, I could do that, but I could do that tomorrow. I could do that a couple of days from now, right?
Yeah.
Usually, or it's not important, usually those are things that actually move the needle.
Yeah.
They're the things that like push you past it all.
Yeah.
Right?
Plus, if it makes you that uncomfortable because you're pushing it all the time, like that is an area you need to work on.
Yes. I love that. I love that. What's your definition of success now? Because you've grown into big, you know, I think people have noticed you. And I say that because, I mean, when you're on the front of a newspaper or a magazine or when you start to be seen on social media as a specific type of entrepreneur, what has changed in that definition of success? For some people, you started out like, let's just get this laundromat going. What does it look like to you now?
For me, success has always been about being happy and being in control of your time.
Mm.
It's always been happy in time. So if I have time, but I look like shit and I feel like shit. Am mm-hmm. I allowed to swear?
Yeah. Yeah. Happening all the time. Swearing all the time.
Well, okay. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But like if you, yeah, you're successful with your time, like you have control of your time, but like you just don't feel good about yourself because you're not working out. Now you're like pigging out and yeah. you're just drinking all the time. Like you don't have a really, really important aspect of your life, you know, at an A+ level, right? Another one would be happiness, right? So mm-hmm. like if you have all this time, you have all this money, but you're just, you have no social life. You mm-hmm. have no friends. You have no one to share it with. You have, you know, maybe no partner. You're single. I don't know. But, you know, at the end of the day, money doesn't buy any of that stuff, right? No. But I'm not going to be sitting here and saying that to me, success doesn't have any financial kind of reward to it, mm-hmm. right? Like for me, finance has always been like a really, really big driver for me.
Yes.
And whether it sound like materialistic or not, I've always had this vision of this lifestyle mm-hmm. that I want to live mm-hmm. and I want that.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
I always work backwards. Right. So let's say this house that I want in my vision is $4 million. Mm-hmm. That means 20% down payment. I need this amount. I want to drive this car. I want my kids to go on vacation this many times a year. Work backwards. Mm-hmm. Okay. This means my expenses in my goal life is going to cost me this much. And how can I make sure that I comfortably can make those payments and not be paycheck to paycheck and pretend like I'm living that life, mm. but actually just have like a ton of credit card debt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Like a lot of people do.
Yeah.
But you're right. Working backwards is the success to writing the future, right? And writing what your story is going to look like. So hearing that is so, it's so great to hear that in your 20s, you're thinking like that, right? Because just imagine your 30s.
Yeah.
It's a whole nother level. I always say your 20s is where you're working really hard. Your 30s is where you're building.
Yeah.
And where your 40s is where you're actually enjoying a lot of it. And it sounds, but a lot of people say their 40s is their best time to pivot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. Like I more and more hear that a lot, like 40, 45, it's like you pivot. And I'm like, what? I thought this was done. They were finished. Just joking.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I think KFC,
yeah,
the owner of KFC or the founder,
yes,
he started KFC.
I don't 40,
someone fact
45
checked,
or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Very late into
it. Same with Vera Wang. She was 48. There was like a bunch of people.
So many people.
Yeah.
So many people.
And I do believe that because you have so much confidence in your 40s. That's what I've noticed. The difference between like a 20, 30, and 40 is the confidence level. It's almost like so, they're so
it's different
sure.
types of confidence though, right?
Yeah.
When you're 20, you're like naive.
You're like naive.
And confident.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, I can do this. This is it.
But it's like that takes you to try new things too.
Amazing. Yeah. I could talk to you forever, but everyone's telling me to stop. I'm going to do a rapid fire for you.
Okay.
Here we go. What is one book or podcast that every entrepreneur should read?
Okay, so right now I'm actually in the middle of this book.
Okay.
It's How to Make $1 Billion by Brad Jacobs.
Oh, such a good book.
Yeah, you read it?
Such
a
good book.
Okay,
yes.
I read it on the airplane and just me with my highlighter.
Yeah,
I
just
love
going.
Him. It's kind of like an autobiography style, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which I've never really tried before, but just I love podcasts. So being able to hear like his story in mm-hmm. his words too. Super, super interesting how he grew all of his $1 billion companies. It's just amazing.
Incredible.
Right? Like only one in a billion people can do it.
Yes.
And he's one of them.
And it was, yeah, I got to reread that.
Yeah.
I'm just
yeah.
like thinking about that.
Yeah. Podcasts, I listen to so many though. Like I
know
list,
you're
like,
give me one. What's your one that you listen to?
One that I listen to, I like the Iced Coffee Hour a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. I love that.
Yeah. That was like a casual one.
That's a good like in the background noise. I love that. What's one thing you'd stop doing immediately if you could start all over again?
Stop doing immediately?
What's one thing you'd stop doing immediately or one thing that you would take or stop doing if you could start all over again?
I would stop going to bed so late.
Okay.
And
I know.
Just have a longer wind down time. Like I'm really working on that.
I know, me too, but it's really hard. What's your most underrated business skill that you actually personally think you have?
Charisma.
It's such an important thing.
Yeah. You can't just be like analytical and like communication, sure, like you can communicate, but like, do you communicate aggressively, right? Like, you need to communicate in a way where people feel good about supporting your business, right? Like, definitely. They want to support the business because like, you're such a great person.
Yes, I love that. Last but not least, what's one word that defines great leadership?
I want to say communication again. Yeah.
Honestly, I'll tell you, after being in so many partnerships, we always draw back onto communication.
Yeah.
It's such a hard thing to kind of get to, especially when you're different types of people. So I really believe that. What does get on top mean to you?
Get on top to me means that you are striving to be the best version of yourself and you are fully listening to the positive self-talk that you give yourself, because we all have two sides of our brains. We have the side that, you know, has all the doubt, you should not be doing this, da 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 da. And the other side, it's like the angels on your shoulders.
Yeah, you need to have both. I love it. Thank you, Maureen, for being on Get On Top.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Get On Top. Don't miss out on more incredible stories by rating, reviewing, and following our podcast on your platform of choice. Remember to tag us on social media at Get On Top Podcast. Until next time, keep climbing, keep striving, and always remember, the view is worth it from the top.
This podcast is produced and edited by Podfather Creative.